Hey, Derek.
Hey, Trey. It's episode 50.
Dude, it's like a celebration with nothing going on.
Yes, nothing exciting.
Kind of the way I like to do my birthdays. Just,
yeah.
Hey, it happened. We're moving on.
But how long ago was 50?
Almost 2 years ago.
Man.
Almost 2 years ago. But yeah, this is episode 50 of the Beyond the Curve, the MX podcast. We're out here on a blustery day. We're actually a couple days behind. Family, racing, just life.
We've been behind the last few weeks.
Yeah.
It's just full swing racing down here.
But we're back on the pool deck, and my God, there's a new addition. We got a hammock. We should do a cozy episode from the hammock.
We might have to.
That would be kind of funny. But nope, no racing last weekend professionally. There are Loretta Lynn's qualifiers. I figure we'll talk about WW. We'll talk about the upcoming race, and just maybe I've got a question I'm going to pose. Just, and I would love to get some interaction from you and from anybody that might run across this. I know you can do some social media stuff and clip some things out. So let's dive into it. WW Loretta Lynn's qualifier last weekend. You had two riders up there trying to get their way forward to the next step, which is the Loretta Lynn's regional. So how did it go for you guys?
It was an eventful weekend. So I want to bring up some results here from some people. So the track was gnarly. They got a ton of rain. We were up there Thursday. I think it was Wednesday. They got a ton of rain. The entire start was covered in water. That's what everybody was telling us the when we got there, when we started practicing Friday. So it was a very soupy mess. The track is real like northern dirt anyway. So it just turns to straight mud. We could walk on the track and sink. It was wild, but it was pretty decent turnout. A little less than I expected, honestly. Being one of the last qualifiers and the last one in Florida, I expected to be a full house. We went up as Micro One, 4-6 shaft drive, and then Caleb Groves rode 250 Pro Sport. So 250A, the pro class. It was a stacked class for sure. So let me get some results up. So there's a lot of good names up there, honestly. Jesse Ansley, I know you guys have had him on the off-road side of the podcast. He was up there qualifying. Dustin Jensen, he does a lot of training down at, I think it's Moto Bros, Okeechobee. So he was in the 250 Pro Sport class. Obviously Caleb. We're gonna have something coming up on that pretty soon. I just don't know when to announce some cool stuff going on, but
well, that ball's in your court, so I know we've talked off camera and privately and in our office and that kind of stuff. So when you're ready for that,
yeah,
we'll announce it. But it is kind of funny that like the off-road world was on a little break too. I think they had like a 3 week break. So it's kind of funny that Jesse put on a small tank, took off the hand guards, and off we went to go try to qualify for some motocross stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So like 250 Pro Sport, Dylan Rample out of, Ontario was down here.
It was probably still cold up there.
I'm guessing he was down here for a little, Florida getaway.
I can't say bike week anymore. Cause
no. So it's hard to tell. There's a lot of Canadians down here pretty often. So, Patrick Murphy out of Iowa, Georgia, some more Jesse Ansley, obviously more Georgia, another Iowa, and Maryland were the top nine. So, guys from all over the place.
Yeah.
But yeah, the competition was stiff, especially in the pro class and a track that gnarly. Caleb come off after practice. He's like, dude, this is probably the gnarliest track I've ever rode.
Welcome to the big boys.
Yeah, and I've seen him ride some pretty gnarly conditions. But his concern was, he's like, I don't know how the PWs are going to do it. I'm like, well, you know, it is what it is. So Loretta's is going to be the same. Yeah. So,
I mean, last year they ran them in a swamp.
Yeah. Yeah, they absolutely did. And they pushed their bikes most of the time. So Caleb went out and he got 11th Moto 1. he had a pretty bad start and then tipped it over. So getting the bike back up and going, that was a challenge. He's running the old kickstart right now, so he's kind of already at a disadvantage. And then we got to get his physical fitness up just a little bit. Obviously, we were honestly prepared for 3-lap races, and we didn't know that Pro Sport was running. I believe they ran 6, because in the riders' meeting they said that the races were three laps. So he went out, obviously didn't pace himself. It was 3 laps. He knows he can do 3 laps hard, so he was working hard. But at come lap 4, he was pretty well exhausted.
And that's something that as he progresses and knows, you guys are kind of learning this together. The rules, what's going to be expected. Those races do get longer. They do get – it's funny. The races get longer. And then at some point, we've talked about that privateer fitness needing to get into night shows. Right now, he needs the upper level fitness to last that 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's – he's already at that point. Like, we need to work on mainly just fitness. The riding is there. The only reason the riding slacks off at all is because of the fitness. Yeah. So it's at the point we need to find some kind of program and get him on a typical regimen and try to put out those 20-minute motos. I mean, he needs to be good for half an hour, and then, you know, we're good for 20 minutes. So the Moto 2, he actually pulled the whole shot. They didn't give it to him, which is irritating. Scoring was kind of funky there. I'm not sure who was doing it or how they were judging everything or even where the whole shot they were choosing the whole shot from, because he came around the first turn just screaming way ahead of everybody. They ended up giving it to Jesse Ansley, who was 5 bikes behind the leader. So how they scored that, I'm not sure. It's literally like whoever popped the gate first got the whole shot.
I did see the video, and I don't know which class it was. I think Jesse stayed and raced someone. So, dude, they were hanging off the back of those bikes down the straightaway.
Oh, yeah. That is the biggest start I have ever seen. We've never been up there, but it's a 200-yard start.
It's long.
It is ridiculous. And it's you're watching PWs take off, and it's like, doo-doo-doo. And, you know, they're bouncing ruts, and it's ridiculous. For them, like, obviously you got to start them on the gates, but for the love of God, cut the track somewhere or something, because it's
in there a pond right there though? Like, there's not
you gotta go, you go out around the pond that has an island right in the center, and they're just going and going and going.
They're like, oh, the track's done. Oh wait, we just started.
Yeah. I mean, it's they definitely get their workout just on the start. Yeah. But we jump in. So like our class, we actually had another rider, Jackson Bilbrey, up there with us. They were staying with us and he was trying to qualify, which he did. So Moto 1 for us, we actually got up there at Thursday at about 11 o'clock at night and needed to switch motors out. So we swapped a brand new motor from our new sponsor, Axiom Performance. Spent all night doing that till about 12:30, getting that thing all tuned in and ready to go, doing its heat cycles to get it broke in. Finally got to bed, woke up. First thing, we had practice at 8 on Friday, and I was tuning the thing, trying to get it broken. And so they did like three practices. And obviously for a PW, those kids were worn out. But we got that bike broke in real well. And then Moto 1, we come out, and it's still a little lacking on the bottom end. The bike's fast, like stupid fast. So anybody looking for a PW build, Axiom Performance, they're a sponsor of ours, but they're top notch. Anyway, we get into Moto 1 and we drop the gate and the bike like lags a little bit. So he didn't get the best start, but then he's hanging off the back of that thing, just giving it all it's got. And he cross rutted when he was off the back of it, and he jumped out of it, and it literally turned him broadside and shot him right into a kid. And he just plowed that kid.
Oh.
So Bowen ended up getting tangled up underneath the bike, and he couldn't get out. I watched him kick and kick and kick, and he's looking at me like I'm going to come help him, and I can't.
Yeah.
So AMA events, you can't do that unless they're hurt. I mean, that's a different scenario. but I knew he wasn't hurt. He was kicking and kicking, and then so I had to wait for them to come out, pick the bike up, and these guys clearly don't know PWs because they would kick, and then they would listen to see if it was running, and then he would kick again. I'm like, start the damn thing, you know? I was not happy. But they finally got it running. He took off. He's at least half a track down, and this track had 2-minute lap times for the average guy. Not even PWs. The average guy. It was now they did cut it down for the PWs, so it was probably still 2-minute lap time with the cut down track. By the time he got up, he was half track behind from the last guy, and you know, there was a beginner kid out there, and he was still half a track down from him. And I'm like, good Lord Almighty! Like, there goes our chance at all, honestly. Usually something like this, once you go down, you're done.
Yeah.
But he actually came back. It blew my mind the way he rode. I mean, he was just pounding ruts like he was on a 250. Came back to 11th. And I'm honestly surprised he caught anybody being that far down with three laps. It's so short. But he did it. We got back to 11th. And I told him, like, we got to step it up, Moto2. Like, the only chance you're going to do this is like a third, fourth, fifth would be ideal. We preach to these guys, and I preach to Caleb. I'm like, listen, we're not out there to win. You're out there to get ninth place. Do not worry about winning, because worrying about winning on a track like that is pushing the limits.
Yeah.
So I tried to preach to these guys, like, ninth place. If you're getting close to that transfer position, then ramp it up a little bit. Like, just maintain, keep the bikes on two wheels. Neither of them could. So, I mean,
there's step one.
So that we struggled with that. And Moto 2 for Caleb, he, like I said, he got the hole shot and ended up taking a foot peg to the hand while he was on the handlebar. And he rode the whole Moto 2 with a swelled up hand. A clutch hand at that on a gnarly ruddy track. So he definitely, like, he had his work cut out for him, and so did Bowen, just finishing 11th. They both finished 11th in Moto 1, so it was definitely a workout.
Yeah.
And that, like, Moto 2 for Bowen, he come out, and the start still wasn't great because we still had, like, that lag. But he, like I said, he hung off the back of that thing, and he weaved in and out of everybody. When he come around the first turn, he was in second. He dropped down into a rut, like, in the turn, and then one kid passed him, and he rode third the entire moto. And Moto 2, the ruts, like, it dried up a little bit, but they were deeper. So the one turn, there was you get to start straight, then there was, like, a turn that came down in right by the hole shot, and that's right where all that water laid. So for the PWs, they were all coming down the finish line and hitting these braking bunts and doubling them, you know. So Bowen comes down, you know, he's doubling these things, and you watch some of these kids will come into that turn and it just stops their bike dead. But Bowen was, like, pounding through that, which was absolutely mind-blowing. Like, I'm extremely proud of his riding there. But he rode third the entire race, and there was a spot you couldn't see coming up to the finish line. It was white flag. I called his mom. She didn't come with us, my wife, and I'm like, listen, he's in third. She's like, you're stressing me out. Why'd you even call me? I'm like, he's in third. This is what we need. Like, the kid is hauling ass. So he dropped down into that section and still in third, and then I see fourth, fifth, sixth. I'm like, oh, you have got to be kidding me. So he finally come around. It was literally the last turn at the finish line. He crossed the finish line in ninth, but the guy waving the flag, Bowen, come up. He was pushing so hard, he pulled a Chase Sexton and 360'd that bike and flew off of it, but he was right past the flag. So, like, I was patiently waiting for the results to see if they actually gave it to him, but they gave him ninth. He qualified 10th overall, which top nine go through. But we had one kid already qualified for Loretta's, and he was not supposed to be qualifying for that race. There was no Q beside his name in any of the results, so that put Bowen in. But now something has come to light that they're trying to say that he was qualifying, so it has kicked Bowen out of regionals. So I'm kind of fighting that battle with MX Sports because I have all the pictures that you know, the Q wasn't beside his name, and because the kid worked for it. I mean, shitty luck. We went down a few times, but he was fast. I mean, I have no doubts with regionals that if he can ride like that, and the regionals at North Carolina Motorsports Park, so it's very hard packed from what I understand, and it's like clay. So PWs will get a real fast-paced track, kind of like a Dade City. You know, they flatten it all out. So it's something he's kind of used to, and he's extremely fast at Dade. So I'm gonna push and push and push to get him in there. But yeah, A27MX made it through, as far as we know. Yeah. So on to regionals. Caleb's regional will be at in Georgia.
Where is it in Georgia? Is it it's not itching Kentucky, is it?
No. I honestly can't remember off the top of my head. I'll have to look it up.
I
But
don't know.
it's like North Georgia area.
Because they separate the little kids from the big kids, right?
Yeah, so it's amateurs and youth.
Yeah.
Which I always wonder why they did that. I mean, I don't know if it's just to break the time up, you know, to shorten the race,
Yeah.
you know, just to run them on a Saturday instead of Saturday and Sunday. But if they run them together at areas, what's the difference? Usually they send the bigger guys out there to put lines in the tracks, and then, you know, they break the classes up that way. But I don't know.
So what did I know this is a journey for Caleb. I mean for Bowen it's fun. I mean honestly at 5 years old it doesn't really matter, you know, if he makes it or not. I mean it's fun, but for Caleb this is the journey he wants to go on. What is he saw what he needs to work on and he also saw like okay, so this is the speed and these are names that probably aren't going to be going to ride Supercross motocross, not all of them. What's his thought process now?
So, yeah, coming out of that weekend,
Because you have a lot of time. It's a long ride home.
yeah, and it's like we said, you know, we talked while we were cleaning up and all that, getting the bikes cleaned up, and you know, the focus is training, but from here on out, it's, you know, just doing what we got to do to get him to Loretta's, because getting your pro license is extremely difficult now. It used to be actually fairly easy. When we were all going through that, 60 points in an 18-month span at going to pro-am races was really not that difficult because you had full gates. You could leave with 20 points from a race. Nowadays, you get eight guys on a gate
Yeah.
at a pro-am, so you're leaving with 3 points if you win. It's extremely hard to travel the country and try to gather your points when you're only getting three at a time and you need 60 in an 18-month span.
Yeah.
And there's only select races. So we're going the Loretta's route right now. If we can qualify for Loretta's in pro-am or pro sport and cross the gate at Loretta's, you know, you just have to race. You get your license. So that's the goal. Caleb wants to go pro. That's obviously our goal together, is to get him to that point. And there's going to be a big discussion about this here soon. So the goal is to get him to that point and then get some futures under his belt this year. I got to get him to a Supercross track. Right now we're working on a bike. Like, we got to get a bike. He's running mine, but it's not. My bike runs really well, but it's kickstart, so you're at a disadvantage, unless you're Ken Roczen, and he's still at a disadvantage. I mean, look
Yeah.
how many times that, and that's what happened at WW here. Like, Caleb went down, and if the bike lays just the right way for an extended period of time, you're talking 10 kicks to get him back running, where you can just press a button, and you're exerting that much energy when he's already exhausted. So yeah, the goal is to push through, you know, do what we got to do to get to Loretta's. We get to regionals and his top six go through. So all he has to do is just maintain. We're not there to win, and I'm gonna keep pushing that through his head. You gotta ride fast. I mean, you're riding with the best in the country that aren't
Yeah.
there yet. You know, the next upcoming breed. So he's gotta push through, and we just gotta get to Loretta's. I mean, that's just how it is.
And then it goes from there. So it's just it's a progress, but it's keeping that main goal in front of them, but realizing, dude, you got these pieces. Like, you can't even think about that right now. You got to get this next piece.
Yeah. So his qualifier is in Lazelle, Georgia. It's at that Okinawa or whatever, MX. You ever heard of it? I've heard of it.
Yeah.
It's like Okinawa.
Okay.
Something like that. It's a big, long word. I don't know.
Okay.
I've heard of it. Never been there.
I guess you will be.
Possibly. Might just send him on his own. If we have to race North Carolina, there's a good chance that he's going to be going there, and we'll be going to North Carolina. It's a couple weeks apart, but to try to get them all around, it's going to be difficult. So send him with a buddy and his bike. And
so when is that?
When's
yours?
Ours would be May 24th through the 27th, and then the next one is June 7th or June 9th. It's coming up quick, but there's a little time to prepare at least. We're going to hit Dade this weekend, and it's kind of like a building weekend. Obviously, Dade's fun for us, so we try to hit all of them. It's just we know everybody. Everybody knows us. It's fun. They're always a fun weekend, but we use them as it's a local race to get the gate drops and build and learn. And, last weekend, the last race that we had at Dade, Bowen was learning. He was hitting doubles. So at a comfy track like that, I like to push the limits. If they're comfortable with the track, we can push limits and try new things and race, but train at the same time. So the
race for, I know you're not going to load up because there's nothing, you're not going to load up and go to North Carolina for a test run, but I got a question for Caleb. Is it worth going up and like riding the track maybe in May to see like what it looks like?
I mean, if it's a track that's open all the time, yeah, it would be beneficial because you're going to get guys that's their local track.
Yeah.
They might not be pro guys, but they're going to be pro guys on that track, and they're going to get to Loretta's. It doesn't matter if they're pro guys; they're going to try.
Because, like, I know golf, these guys they'll go play the course before they play the course.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's the same in motocross. To try to get some time in on it to see what it looks like, the atmosphere, the vibe, where it is.
It never hurts. I mean, the track's probably going to be a little bit different come that time, but you can at least get a feel of the dirt.
Yeah.
Bike tuning, suspension.
And it's going to be hotter than snot. You better be in shape by then.
More than likely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's, like I said, we got a lot of building at this point.
It's a cool journey. I mean, honestly, watching from the outside, peripherally, I mean, I've been a part of Ryland's program this year, and you're in there and you see the depth and the what it takes in that area. So watching someone go from that journey is kind of cool. That's a fun part.
Yeah, it's really fun for me because we're starting from the beginning.
Yeah.
We're starting with a kid that literally just got on a bike a year ago again. He's been off the bike for 6 years. So we're starting from scratch with a guy that has the talent that, had he stayed on a bike, should absolutely be pro already. So we're starting from scratch and building step by step by step. And it's like a project for me. I'm very passionate about it and getting him to that point. It's a journey for me too, because it's new. Obviously we're doing this with Ryland, and I've been riding forever, and I've been through all this Loretta stuff, but it's, everything's different. This is 12 years ago,
yeah,
11 years ago. So it's like, almost reliving me, but doing it through somebody else. And, I really enjoy it. Even, watching my kid go through it, like you said, he's 6 years old. He doesn't really give a damn. He just wants to race.
Yeah, it's just fun.
Yeah. So, and he was extremely ecstatic when he got a Loretta's trophy, and that's cool. He loves that stuff. He called everybody he could to tell him he qualified, and nobody knows what he's talking about except for his mom. But all the anybody that knew that what Loretta's even was there. So
yeah.
He called grandma and grandpa, and he called mom because she wasn't there, and called everybody he could on the way home and when he wasn't sleeping. And I qualified. And they're like, oh, that's good. Is that good? Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
It's like my daughter trying to explain her dressage test to people that have no idea what that is. So.
But it is a big deal. I mean, honestly. I will say something about WW that I wasn't overly happy with. They gave out trophies, okay? The Loretta's Journey is a big deal. Even Area is just Area is a small race. I can't complain for us because they gave trophies to all the PWs that made it. But they only gave trophies to like top three in a lot of classes. Yeah, that's how it's going to be down the road, but it's cool to have that I qualified trophy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they skimped out on the trophies for everybody else. People. And the lady, it's Kathy Green, she does a lot of the AMA stuff. She's a lot of the races, does the scoring, the paperwork. She's like, well, it's just an area. Like, I don't understand why you're so upset. Because the one guy was pretty upset about his kid didn't get a trophy. I'm like, it's just an area to you. Like, this is your job. You're talking to a kid that's going through this journey that wants something to show that he made it through the first step. I'm not a fan of participation trophies, but if you qualify, then that deserves something. She's like, well, you'll get your ticket for Loretta's if you qualify at regionals. Yeah, but there's a race before that. Like, this is a journey that we're going through that you spend a lot of money to do. You know, just getting to this race alone is an area is expensive.
Yeah,
regionals is more expensive, and then we get to Loretta's where we spend five digits, which is absolutely insane. And I don't know why we're even doing it, but we are. It's mind blowing to me that you're making a ton of money holding this area. Like, it is not going to kill you to spend an extra $1,000 on trophies.
Well, there's a lot of kids that they qualified out of the area, but this year that's all they're going to get. They're going to qualify out of the area.
Exactly.
Either mom and dad can't afford to go to the regional, or they're not going to qualify out of the regional, and that's something they can hang on to. I get what you're saying, like the non-participation, but that is the next step.
Yeah.
And you celebrate that next step. And then if they don't qualify, guess what? They can look back and they go, well, I made it out of the area.
Yeah.
So next year my goal is to make it out of regionals. If we can afford to go or whatever, then you get that. And then that area trophy probably doesn't mean anything. But this year, right now, that area trophy means something.
I mean, a lot of kids, that trophy, you know, they'll look at it every day, and like that's a consolidation to push, you know, and most of the kids, it gives them the drive to just carry forward. Like I know they don't make it through regional, they come home, they still see that trophy. I made it through area, you know, at a young kid's age, it's like, you know, what can I do to get regionals next year? And it drives them.
Yeah.
Bowen loves showing off his trophies. Every time somebody, you know, my father-in-law's down here, just flew in yesterday. First thing Bowen did, took them back to the trophy room.
Except for me. He won't show me.
Yeah, his bedroom, but his trophy room. I mean, his room is full of trophies. And he's proud of that. He's 6 years old. That trophy's all that matters. And he walks into his bedroom, and we have 50, 60 trophies in there. I mean, how many six-year-olds have that? So they're proud of what they can do. And then you celebrate these kids that made it through an area, and then they have nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
You know, some, they don't care about pictures. So it's just, that was irritating to me, and I need to get that off my chest, I guess. But the facility is nice.
It is nice. It's too bad that it's in Florida, because it's just never, it has hosted big races.
Yeah.
And it's a big enough facility. It could host big races. The problem is it's in Florida, and in those races would have to occur at the wrong time of year.
Yeah, miserably hot.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason they really don't do it. I mean, if they did it early season, I think we'd be okay.
But now you're asking guys to go from California to here.
To Florida. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it would have to be one of the first races. Yeah. And it's big enough for that. And they do have two Supercross tracks, and there's a lot of training that happens there. But like I said, it's a beautiful facility. I do wish they would do more big stuff there. Yeah. They hold the Florida Series there, and then they hold qualifiers there. So it really doesn't get used much but for practice. I mean, it's literally – I know Ryland trains there a lot, mainly just outdoors, but the Supercross tracks are beautiful. They're gnarly for sure. Most people don't understand. Like, if you look at a Supercross track without a tough block or any kind of barriers, you understand how big stuff actually is. Most people don't get to see a Supercross track that isn't, you know, all prettied up. Yeah. It makes everything look smaller when all that stuff's up there, but you get to see what a track really looks like when you go to a lot of these training facilities like we do. And it really puts it into perspective. So
yeah, you go stand at, like, oh, it's a 3-footer, and you go stand and you're like, oh, wow, that's what a 3-footer actually looks like. That's a five. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's straight up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got to try to hit that. That's why I always say, when we're there in the stadium watching and you watch these guys downside with perfect precision, the jumps, and you're like, the transition of that, it's not an easy angle.
Yeah, and a lot of it is honestly navigating in the air. So you can't see the landings on pretty much anything in Supercross ever. Once you're in the air, you can manipulate and or navigate the bike to hit that landing. And a lot of these guys, when you see them overshooting or undershooting, I mean, at that point, there's nothing you can do. You know, in the air, you're going to overshoot or undershoot. Yeah. So you do whatever you can. But if you get a pretty good takeoff, you can manipulate the bike enough to land it right.
It's
but
like they're pulling it up, setting it down, leaning it over.
Yeah.
I'm still amazed. There's so much trust. Like the scrub. Now we're scrubbing speed by hooking lips with the back tire so that we can. That's now the braking. It's like, dude, we do everything in our power to jump over stuff, and now these guys are like literally jumping over it to hook the back tire so that they can make the next left.
Yeah.
And all that is felt on those practice tracks. And yes, that's the tough blocks make it pretty and tighten everything up. And you'll hear the guy say, like, oh man, my first time in the stadium with the tough blocks. And you're like, does it really make that big of a difference? But yeah, if you know you have an out on a practice track, or they ride that line that there would be a tough block, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got to go right beside that thing and hope I don't kick left or right in the dance of the chassis. And it does put a difference. So those guys being able to get that time on the Supercross track, and it's nice that there are a few. I mean, you would think there would be more, but they're not easy to maintain. And they break down. I mean, think about reshaping whoops.
Yeah,
once a week.
Owning Supercross tracks is extremely expensive because you're grooming them all the time. I mean, look at an actual Supercross race, how many times Dirtworks is out there fixing the track. So
we're in the eyes of Ricky, the SMX track crew.
The track crew. So, but you know, you own one, you're doing the same thing all the time, and it costs a lot of money to maintain. So it's awesome that the facilities that do have them, you know, have them for these guys, but there's none around here, and it sucks. You know, our closest Supercross tracks, Moto Sandbox, I would say, and it's 2.5 hours away. So, it's difficult.
But, and a lot of them are private.
Yeah, they're all private.
You got to know the people,
and or more than likely, you got to have your license to ride.
Yeah.
So, if you don't have a Supercross license, then you're probably not getting on that track, unless you're a Futures guy.
Which basically they're getting their license.
Yeah, I mean they're working. They have their restricted. That. Yeah.
So,
but permit, no. Learning permit,
learner's permit. So it was an off weekend for the pros. Were there any pros hanging out this weekend over there?
Ryan Sipes was there.
Okay.
Trying to think if anybody else was there. I seen Ryan. Because
that would typically be their off. I mean, they'd be racing, so they're not doing. They're not doing motos on Saturday most of the time.
No, but they're always at the races somewhere.
Yeah.
We were so busy, I can't even wrap my head around if anybody else was there. I know Ryan Sipes was there. I did get to see him.
Was he there with his kid or was he there for himself?
I don't know. I just seen him. He had a GoPro. I do know he trains with the Keelons. So he trains Rowdy Keelon, who was in our class, and then the e-bike class. I think he was in the Cobra too. I don't know if he was with them or if he brought his kid.
Yeah.
But he's carrying around a GoPro, so he was there for somebody.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to talk to him. He was passing through as we were heading out for practice, I think. So,
well, we touched on the amateur side, which is the journey. The pro guys were off. The funny thing is, we get videos all week of the pro guys. They're off from Supercross. All that meant was hammer down motocross.
Yep, riding outdoors. And it's crazy that they'll switch from outdoors to Supercross. But they're pretty well versed on Supercross at this point, so yeah. They just kind of do their thing.
And
but,
some of them were look like, I mean, they're the Insta bangers, but man, they were flying.
Yeah, Cameron McAdoo looked really good. The video I watched of him, that's going to be exciting to see. So we got what, 5 more rounds of Supercross?
Which sounds funny. That's almost a third of the season. There's still like a third of the season left.
Yeah.
A big question, in your opinion, yes, we saw Eli beat Eli, and we saw tragedy happen for Jet. Do we feel like Jet's going to put it together?
Yeah, I feel like you give him a week off, and he'll get calm, cool, and collective, and go back out. And I think it's going to change. Like, I don't want to say change because he's already still in the lead. So I think we'll get more of the normal Jet from here on out. I mean, he knows that he's got to kind of keep it together at this point. So.
Yeah, I feel like it's actually between Cooper and Jet. It's a good battle. It's legit. Tomac's wandering back there. You got Chase Sexton. I think we'll see some winners, but I it pains me to say it, not because I dislike the kid, but it pains me to say that Jet might pull this off. Now, we have noticed in Jet's championship runs, he doesn't finish very strong.
No, not really. I do think we're going to get more Eli, though.
You think so?
You give him another week off. You're not going to see him training for outdoors.
Yeah.
So I think he knows what he's got to work on. He's finally getting Eli back, and he said that he feels like himself again. So I think you give him a week to just build on that.
But does he? Because he's so far down.
It's
hard to win the championship.
Championship, no, but
that you become a disruptor.
Yeah, I mean, he can definitely take some more wins and put a hurting on the points.
Yeah, I think that's where it is. Is I know that he and Cooper, they're teammates, but he's not thinking, if I win, I can really help Cooper win this championship. I don't think it's there.
No.
But
he's at the point he just wants to finish on a good season, because I think this is it. We did get AC finally announced his retirement. We all knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But he officially announced it. So, looking like Jorge Prado's coming over to steal AC's spot.
Is that what you're thinking?
I do believe.
I can't believe Red Bull would let him go. I truly believe I cannot, because he has been with Red Bull. Well, he's been with KTM and GasGas. I cannot believe that he would.
I mean, you offer the right amount of money.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know, but from everything I'm hearing, the little bit of research I've been doing on it, it's looking like that's how it's lining up.
Okay, question. Quick. Are we going after the flashy? He didn't really, I mean, he won a heat race in the mud. He really didn't do anything. He's better than Cameron McAdoo?
No. Race experience, yeah. But Supercross experience, absolutely not. He come over and he rode well.
Yeah.
But Supercross is an animal, so I don't know. I mean, he did well in the mud, yeah, and that's his normal. He's used to all those conditions, but I think he can be much better,
because he's got a long season of MXGP. Their season goes long.
Yeah.
Before he can even hop on a Supercross.
Well, you wonder if you would have put him on a 250, what would have happened? Just to, lined up with some of those other guys.
But was adamant he was not going to a 250.
And do you blame him? I mean, he's been on 450 for how long now? So, I think he'll perform really well. I do.
But he's not a race winner. Not in this current environment.
No, I don't think so. I mean, he could be.
I feel like Kawasaki would want someone. They have Jason Anderson. They've had Adam C. and Cirillo. At this point, Jason Anderson is your guy that's your top guy. Adam is your face.
Yeah, they need a top guy.
Yeah.
you know, they need to be struggling for like a, or pushing for like a Cooper Webb, or you think at some point, I mean, they got Levi Kitchen, their 250 class this year is doing really well. But their 450 has been lagging,
yeah,
or lacking for some years now.
And that's why I looked at like Cameron McAdoo. He's getting older. He's put in the time. He's, whether or not he wins the championship, he's proved his sturdiness and he can ride.
He's got the balls to do it.
You got a, you've got a built-in pipeline. Like the guy's been riding. Like he has, he's got the tenacity. I just sometimes wonder, I have nothing against the international riders. I just sometimes wonder, like, do we see the flair? What does Prado bring that McAdoo doesn't have?
I mean, if that's the case, I bet you see McAdoo's going to leave Kawasaki. I mean, I would. You know, if you get passed up on a team that you've been on for how long, and, you know, you want to jump to 450, and they choose some. Yeah.
And I don't know if McAdoo wants to go to 450.
I don't know either.
But it seems like the right.
You would imagine, but maybe he's going to stick out 250 another year. I don't know. Yeah. He could retire on 250s. It's hard to tell. I mean, some guys do.
Well, speaking of retirement, it's not a retirement announcement. Club MX's Club MX Muckoff Yamaha has pulled Jeremy Martin for the remainder of Supercross.
Yeah, which is not overly anything new for him. I mean, it sucks. But, with his injuries from some of the previous races, it's just probably too much to handle at this point for him. I don't know if he'll come back.
What about outdoors? They struggled. The team itself struggled mightily with their 250s outdoors last year.
Yeah, and he's an outdoors guy.
Yeah.
I would hope he would return for outdoors and just run it. I mean, that's where he got hurt last year and destroyed his arm. But I think it could probably put them on the map a little bit better if he did run it.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they go more of the 450 route outdoors, just for them. But I don't know what that does for Jeremy, because they struggle. Maybe they figured something out. You never know. But
their bikes are great, Supercross.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of motor to run outdoors.
Yeah. And you see a guy like a Jeremy Martin, but we also don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to push it as hard as he used to. You know, you don't know. You just don't know. But
he might just want to be done. Yeah. I mean, the family owns the track. It's hard to tell. You know, you don't know what goes through these guys' minds. They fight a lot of demons.
You've got Dylan Ferrandis with the Phoenix crew. I had heard a rumor that maybe he would be the Kawasaki guy, but I'm guessing not. You know, but he hasn't proven that he can do much more than a 6th, 7th.
No, but he's doing it on a satellite team.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know. We'll see how it all pans out.
It's very early, and we'll start to see the rumors flying. But on the AC side, I know he never accomplished what everybody thought he was going to accomplish. But as a spokesman for the sport and a face of the sport, you can't have asked for a better professional.
Correct.
His history, his knowledge of the history of the sport, his love of the sport. He's going to be fine, folks. He has investments. He's done.
Nothing to worry about.
He's okay. He's still going to work, but I think he's going to work because he loves the sport.
Yeah.
Do we see him in an ambassador role, or do we see him?
Do we see
him in a TV role? Someone's losing their job if he goes TV.
Yeah, because he's very well spoken.
He's very good.
He knows the sport very well. He's been in it since he was a kid at this level.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm anxious to see.
I'm curious, because really, for him to go, because I know Villopoto is doing amazing things with Yamaha, and it was weird to see him go from Kawasaki to Yamaha. Kawasaki has McGrath as their ambassador right now.
Yeah.
Seeing Cirillo as the younger side on the dirt bike side would probably be better, because McGrath is doing a lot of stuff with their side-by-side program and different things.
Yeah.
Maybe, because for him to go to another brand would be really weird.
McGrath doesn't know the new bikes as well as Adam.
He's 50 years old.
He's racing two strokes. You know? That's was his go-to. So,
but he's damn good with the people. I mean, McGrath may be the nicest guy. Adam Cianciarulo may be the second nicest guy.
Yeah.
But
they got a good team, like, regardless. But you're not going to see him leave Kawasaki, I don't think.
That's what I was getting to. Yeah. It would be damn weird to see him go be the Honda ambassador.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. He's going to be a part of Kawasaki one way or another. Yeah. I don't see any way around that. He's been on Kawasaki's forever.
Well, since 65, I think. Yeah. I mean, like, he's been Kawasaki. He hasn't ridden another brand.
No, he's a long-time ambassador of the Kawasaki team. So, does he just step into that role, or does he roll into a Trey Canard with HRC?
Yeah.
You know, and
can he test? That's the question. Can he hold up enough to test?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how bad is this arm injury?
Yeah, I don't know. If you're only on the bike once in a while, but it's hard to tell. We'll see.
I know his golf game will get better.
Oh, yeah.
But really, on the grand scheme of things, the question I want to leave with is this. If we deal with privateers, we talk with privateers, we hang out in the privateer pits, and the answer that I hate but is truthful is money. It's always about money. Give me the money and
sure
I can
make
my program. And I hate that answer, but I know it's true. But I know there's other parts. So what I want is, maybe you have an answer to this too, there is a money aspect. But what is that money being used for? If it's, is there a way that that money can go, instead of me giving Derek cash, can I give Derek cash via logistics management? Making sure you have a place to stay, making sure your bikes get there. Is there meals? Is there being there to make sure that you have someone at the track to push your bike to tech and to hold a pit board for you? Is there, I know it's money, but money is generic. What is that money for? Can I get a take from you as to, I'm not just giving some dude riding around in his van cash, because what's he going to do with that cash?
So for us, from an amateur side, if you were to say, I want to sponsor you, I don't want to give you cash, though. What can I give in another aspect in the form of cash and or assistance, really? If it was significant amount, like, I want to give you $5,000, how can I split it up and or give it in different terms? I would say the best use would be gas cards, hotels, stuff like that. For us, it's not hotels.
Yeah.
It'd be fuel for toy haulers, you know, movement, travel. If you were to give me a Loves or Pilot $1,000 gift card, obviously, that's extremely beneficial. There's Loves and Pilot all over the place. So, truck stops, stuff like that. Race fuel. Wear and tear parts. Tires. You know, if we're not sponsored by tire brands, tires. Carburetors for our end of things. Like, you can do it in different ways. You know, meal. Gift cards for meals, different restaurants or Walmart, you know, Walmart just for groceries, for everything. Yeah. It doesn't have to be cash. Like, there's, and I've said that, I've told our sponsors that, like, yeah, we ask for cash. But it's kind of hard to go to a sponsor and be like, hey, you want to sponsor us $500 for a Walmart gift card? Like, it just sounds weird, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, like a motorsport gift card, even to order the parts that we need, or just anything like that. You know, race fuel, it, gear. You know, you can get gift cards for all this kind of stuff. So, if you didn't want to give cash, like, you could give gift cards for just about anything. Obviously, like, Amazon and stuff is absolutely useless to us.
Yeah.
But, like, industry stuff, and fuel, money, or food, hotels, anything of that nature. So, you know, I guess that would be my take on it. Just
because it's still cash. It's just in a more useful manner than just here's $1,000.
Handing you cash that you could be, you know, just
wasting.
Yeah.
You're not making your program better.
No. Like, if I would be ecstatic if somebody sponsored us and gave us $1,000 Walmart cards or, you know, $1,000 fuel card. You know, it costs us $500 to in fuel just to pull to WW with a toy hauler and back. Yeah. I mean, it's expensive. So if I had a $1,000 gift card for fuel, that'd be freaking fantastic. It doesn't have to be cash. It's, there's so many other ways you can do it to make, like, speaking from our program, but even like for local dealerships, somehow work something out with them that you hand somebody, you want to hand somebody $5,000 and they want to buy a new bike, you know, work it out with the dealership where you can just cut them a check for $5,000 of the bike.
Yeah.
You know, just there's so many scenarios that if somebody came to me, I could, you know, I could write out a list of what would help.
And that's where I was going to. We had a great conversation with Rylan last race. We had a good dinner. And, you know, he brought up, you know, I know it's the answer you hate, but cash. And he did not give me the wrong answer. But being a business person, all it did was provoke thought mm-hmm. of, okay, well, what are you doing with cash?
Yeah.
And
more than likely, half these guys, yeah, they're using it for travel and stuff.
Yeah.
But you get some guys, you want to hand them $5,000, they're going to pay bills.
Yeah. Like, and guess what? They have to live.
Yeah. But I want to support your program and not your living.
Yeah. And I know, and I'm not saying this has nothing to do with Rylan.
It's just he was speaking from that perspective.
He was the provoker of the thought. Like, I know what Rylan does with the money that he gets. I know that because yeah. I've seen him live. I've seen him train. I see how he travels. I see all that. But it made me think, privateers, when you're talking to these people, there's random people like me walking around the pits
yeah.
who are looking to assist. We're not flush with cash. We're flush with ideas and we're flush with availability of resources.
Yeah.
So when someone says, how can I help? Really think about your program. Your program is a business. Think about your program. Okay, it cost me this much to get to this race. I want to stay in a hotel. I would like to have a good meal. It cost me this much to wash my clothes while I'm on the road
mm-hmm.
at a laundromat. Bike, like you said, bike work. So my next question, privateers, what is the minimum amount? And $100, I understand. If someone walks up to you and says, I have $250, I'm not going to say, what's the minimum amount? Is it $1,000? Because everybody, yeah, I'll take the $1,000. What's the minimum amount that would benefit you? I know it costs $258 to enter a race.
Mm-hmm.
So as a person walking around the pits, what is the minimum amount that someone can hand to you and make a difference in your program on a weekend? That's the answer I want.
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. If you're racing East Coast Supercross, there's 9 rounds. If I handed you a check for $270 each week, I've paid for your entry fee. What does that $258 free up for you?
You know, another thing you could do, like if you get those preloaded debit cards nowadays,
yeah.
You're like, I'm going to give you a $1,000 debit card. I have access to the transactions. You know, this will be used for racing expenses, so on and so forth, or it will be offloaded back off of there.
Yeah.
You know, that's another avenue you could take. You don't want to give somebody cash. You want to know where it's going. Here's a debit card. Use it. Here's the PIN number.
Yeah.
Use it for entry fees, fuel. You know, I will. If I'm going to sponsor you, I'm going to track it.
Yeah.
Because
there's an expense to a sponsor. We want to go to the races to help at the races. I've been to plenty of races. I don't need to sit in the stands and watch the race.
No, and to me anymore. We go to a Supercross race, and I'm now at the point where I don't want to be in the stands.
Yeah.
I spent half the time at Daytona in the pits. Like,
there's an activation to the sponsorship.
Yeah.
I have an expense as well being there. Every sponsor you have, unless it's just Larry's Tool Barn who likes you and gives you $500
mm-hmm.
and likes you because you're local, they don't care to go to the race.
Yeah.
I want to go watch the success. I want to be a part of your program. So there's an activation for me to be there.
Yeah. And I want to add more to this, but there's an announcement to make before I can be like, listen, this is what I want to do.
But it's priming that pump, because those are the things, like, my wife and I love the sport, but we get numb when we're told, yeah, we just want cash.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, I watch the way you live. I see your Instagrams. I've seen, are we buying White Claws? Are we training?
Yeah. Cause I will say, like, some of these guys have a specific race account, and, you know, that money goes into that account, and that's what they use for races, but you can't trust that they're all doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, our amateur side, my kids, we get sponsorship. We have cash handed to us. We are paying for entire race seasons. Dade City, paid for. Bowen's season is paid for in two classes. We have one of our sponsors who cut a check to Dade City to pay for the entire season and his gate fees. So Bowen gets in, no gate fees. He's already registered for one class. We, as the podcast, out of my pocket, obviously, we sponsored another class. So,
is that where that big ass sign came from?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw that. I was like, where did that come from?
Yeah. I bought that. That gives you the ability to advertise there.
Yeah.
So we paid for a season. We hung a 4x8 banner. That's why their number plates are on it. It's typically what you do. That's what I like about Dade City. You want to sponsor, you want to advertise there, you have to sponsor a child or a rider.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. Like, it's an awesome program that they have for their sponsorship.
And you know where that money's going.
Yeah. It goes straight to the race fees.
Yeah. We'll go straight to Randy's pocket, but that's okay. Yes. But that means your race is covered. And I know, as someone that wrote out that check, that kid's racing.
Yeah. So, and at the end of the year, if you pay for the whole season, you're getting points, even if you don't come to a race. So, you know, you're in the points hunt, and we go to some of these bigger races where we can't be there. We're still getting 20 points while we're not racing. Yeah. So it goes to something good. The rest of our sponsors, we have either had cash handed to us or like our motor sponsor, Axiom Performance. It gives us a good deal on everything that he gets. So he's a dealer too. He gives us, you know, all of our gear is pretty much cost to him. And he builds our motors for the cost of the parts, essentially. Makes a little bit of money. He's got to make some kind of money.
Yeah, it's a business.
So he makes a little bit of money on us, but nothing like he would for the average person. So that's providing a service for us. There's a lot of sponsorship where it's not sponsorship. It's
in kind.
No, what's the word I'm looking for? Good Lord. It's a hell of a day already. Assistance. It's essential. Support.
Okay.
Rider support.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can get on Hook It or MX Sponsor, and you can get all kinds of support. But it really isn't that helpful, because everything is so overly priced, because you have to do it through their website. And it's only these sites that do that kind of sponsorship or support, or they'll give you 50% off, but their stuff's, you go to Motorsport and you can get the gear for $100 for the set, you know, yeah, watch clearance or something, or they're offering you their set 50% off. That's 300 to start with. So you're not really gaining anything when you go through these support programs. Some of them, it is very helpful, like ASV Levers, stuff like that, that is the same price no matter where you go. If they're giving you 25% off, you're not going to get that on Motorsport, because it's the same on their website as it is through a third party.
Yeah.
So, like, there's just so many avenues that you can take other than cash. I mean, obviously, I'm telling you where all of our cash goes. We pay for race fees. We pay for gear. We pay for fuel, race fuel. Like, none of the money that we have gotten has went into, like, my truck fuel. It all has went into racing. Fuel, gear, full seasons, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, there's so many avenues you can take as far as gift cards. And
well, that's the question I'd like to, as we kind of get through the Supercross season, I'd love to get some more privateer perspectives on that, because it's a very curious, it's a very curious thing, because you should be operating a business. I know you're doing this because you love to ride dirt bikes, but how are you paying? How does it make zero at the end?
Yeah.
And if you're spending more than you're making, how are you justifying that?
And that's how it is with like a lot of these race teams, the big race teams, they'll tell, like Troy Lee, the Gas, they look to break even every year.
Yeah. It's a marketing exercise.
Yeah. And they, I know you probably look from the outside in and you think like these teams are making millions and millions. They're not.
No.
They're spending millions and millions and really not making much. Like it literally pays the bills. Just every year they break even, they pay the bills, they do it again.
And as a privateer, the rider for those big teams makes money, but as a privateer, you are the team.
Yeah, the privateers are,
and you're the rider.
They're making nothing.
So
really,
how are you justifying that? You know, because in my mind, you should be able to not live off, but you should be able, when you cross the finish line and you get paid for that night show or main, that money should become your living money. And everything getting to that point was the expense.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know that's naive thinking, but it's really not naive thinking, because if I'm running a business and I'm making zero, I can't keep spending it to.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, just curiosity. And we had an off week and it's been on my mind. And I know you got stuff in the works and I've seen it now live and in person multiple times, and Rylan has really opened up and talked to us about it. So it's just provoked more thought and really made me dive deeper and wanting to help, but I just don't want to throw stuff out there.
Yeah.
Especially when I have an activation cost of going myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, it costs us a lot of money to be there.
Yeah.
And you know, we've talked to Rylan about this. For us as a sponsor to be at a race and to help you, it costs us a lot of money to be there. Is it more beneficial to have us there and help with whatever you need? Or is it beneficial to give you cash and you do everything alone? So there's a lot. This sport is like one of the only sports that the top guys make a lot of money. But it's an extremely expensive sport to even participate in. Like, most of these professionals are doing it because it's a passion. You know, it's really not a job.
Yeah.
It's a job that they're not making much money at all. So they might make enough to live, but you can look at a professional racer and be like, oh, he's professional, he's rich. You probably make more than he does.
Yeah.
But you just see him on TV.
They are the guys back in the joke days of the guy living in the van down by the river.
Yeah.
Because they're actually in a van.
Yeah. The perspective is so much different in person than what it appears to be on TV.
For those of you who might not understand, some of these amateur kids that have factory backing are making more money than the pro on the line.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I can name quite a few of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of privateers. You might see them pro. They make a main event, even. That's their living expenses for the next week or month or whatever.
The futures guys or the top amateurs at Loretta's are making more than
a professional rider. Yeah, it's they're of course they're going to be the professionals at one point, but you know they're coming in with a good background.
Yeah.
It's very deceiving. Sport is.
Not that we wanted to get off on a low note on an off week, but hey, it was episode 50 and we needed to have a provocative topic. So
yeah, I agree.
But
it's been fun.
I think that's it. So Dade City this weekend?
Yeah, Dade City this weekend. We'll be in Nashville the following weekend with Rylan. Dade City when we come back. Get some good training in. We got some I-4 coming too. So I-4 at Okeechobee this weekend. Moto Bros. We won't be there, but good race, good track, fun time. So if you get the chance, you want to go down, Moto Bros Okeechobee. I know they're doing pit bike, one wheel races, STACYC races.
Oh, wow. So. Well, I'm going to go back to my roots. I'm going to do a little FTR spectating this weekend in the Melon Bash down at Punta Gorda. So I'll be down there Sunday. And I know there's a GNCC in Tennessee at a track they've never run. So there's plenty of racing this weekend that we will cover all next week. This week it was about Loretta Lynn's privateers and the journey that we'll talk about later. So this was episode 50. He is Derek Schaefer. I am Trey Heath. This is the Beyond the Curve podcast, and we will talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.